Steve. Thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder.
That's what I'm talking about.
Wendy's back. For those of you last week who believed me that I...
Who thought I wouldn't come back? You think you can get rid of me that easily?
Sometimes I throw out ideas. I say that you're in jail. I'm not allowed to discuss the details of why you're in prison, but you're in jail. And then we get a couple of texts, most of which saying it's about time. And then some of them say, oh, no. Can't you set up an ISDN line in the prison cell so she can be a part of the show? Well, it turns out you're not in jail. You're back.
Kudos to you for knowing the ISDN line talk.
Very technical.
That's very,
very
good.
Very technical.
Yeah, here's a little something for the listeners out there. Whatever Bill says, it's not true.
I would say take it with a grain of salt, but salt's not the best thing in the world for you.
I don't have high blood pressure,
so
I'm okay.
Take it with some
salt. I'm okay with it.
All right. Oh, so much has happened. Since
How
last
about it?
We spoke, so much has happened. Much of it very, very sad. Awful, awful things.
What's happened to this country?
If the show is more than 3 hours, I would start to answer that. But in 3 hours, I don't think anyone could successfully answer that question. I don't know what's happened to this country.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, it might be hard to answer.
Is anyone else besides myself referring to the country as the divided states of America? Because I think that's what we should call it from here on in. It's insane what's going on. Every time I turned on the TV all weekend long, I just got sadder and sadder and sadder, both with Virginia and then yesterday's Seattle situation was just abysmal, just awful, awful stuff.
I tried to escape the news a little bit. I was off Thursday, had to take Michael to COD, College of DuPage, for orientation. So I was busy. And then Friday, Dylan was getting ready to go to LT High School, had to go get him registered. Saturday, finished cleaning the house. Sunday, had a graduation party. So I was busy all weekend. Mm-hmm. Squeezed in the Bears game. Can I just tell you, the biscuit put it in the basket. Trubisky is pretty amazing. I know I'm coming from zero.
Here we go.
Yeah. Put your seatbelts on, everybody, for this.
Listen, poor Mike Glennon was in there. We're, you know, I'm with all my girlfriends. We're sitting there. We're actually watching the game.
Were you? Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Mike Glennon was having some difficulty. And as soon as Mitch Trubisky gets put in, it was weird to hear the announcements going, pass completed. I haven't heard that in so long.
They had to pass out dictionaries to the fans there at Soldier Field because nobody knew what that meant.
I'm hopeful.
Pass completed.
I am hopeful.
Glennon had a quarterback rating of 0.00, which doesn't sound good.
No. Is that better than Cutler still?
It was 3 points higher than Jay Cutler's. Yes. Yes. All right, it's a preseason game.
I know.
It doesn't mean much.
It's
the first preseason game. It means almost nothing.
It was kind of exciting, you guys, I got to admit.
Was it? Yeah.
I mean.
Is there hope?
There is hope.
In their nation?
There is hope. And I did not see, maybe I didn't look very well, but I didn't see any Jay Cutler jerseys.
Oh, no.
I mean, no one's touching that. I know, but sometimes you spend a lot of money on jerseys and you'd still wear it.
Yeah.
I did not see a one. And they're on clearance now at all the Marshalls and TJ Maxx.
Well, he was on clearance for a while.
Right.
So why wouldn't the jerseys also be on clearance? But for the most part, the people in and around Soldier Field, they have some sort of hope this year, don't they? I mean, they always come in with hope, but then at the 10-minute mark, you go, what am I wasting my hope on this for?
Put it this way. My girlfriend, Sue, has been on the waiting list for 10 years to get season tickets.
Yeah.
And they were like 2,700 on the list. And then all of a sudden they got a letter and said, hey, want some tickets?
Oh, really? They moved up that quickly.
That's what I'm saying. A lot of people are either changing their mind or they were season tickets and said no more.
Yeah.
So, you know, get in now while you can because someday, Bill.
Yeah.
They'll be Super Bowl champs again.
Oh. That's shocking. I made a bet with myself. I said, against myself here, that Wendy will not stay for the entire game.
Stayed for the entire game.
You did.
Wow.
And
I'm shocked.
Listen.
That's not like you.
I don't like to walk a lot, okay?
Yeah.
We were going to go to Kitty O'Shea's for a couple of Bloody Marys before the game. So we parked over by Kitty O'Shea's, which I don't know where that is. It's that way.
Look, for the record, Wendy is
pointing
like left.
Michigan. I don't know where it is.
It's at the Hilton. It's like 700 south.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, that's a long walk.
We walked. We ended up not going to Kitty O'Shea's. We were at some place called Bulldogs, which is right around there. We walked from Bulldogs all the way to Soldier Field.
That's a very long walk.
I got like 20,000 steps that day.
I'm proud of you. That's a
hike. I know. And it was kind of hot on Thursday night, so we're all sweating. And so we get to the game, and we have a couple beers, cool off, enjoy the game, stayed for the entire game. And then we started to walk back, and I said, guys, I'm going to call an Uber and just go home from here. Yeah. I cannot walk anymore. So we did one of those pedicabs.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Is that what they're called?
That's like a rickshaw almost? Yeah.
Oh, my God. Milan had his all tripped out with lights and was blasting All Summer Long by Kid Rock. It was the best $15 I've ever spent to go 5 blocks.
If you had left earlier, you could have split one with Glennon, because I think he left about in the middle of the first quarter, too.
But yes, I stayed for the entire game. I know that shocks
you. Who are you?
Sue's a season ticket holder, so she's a Bears fan.
Wow.
But we didn't even think of going.
I'm impressed.
I was really proud of myself because in the third quarter, there were 3 minutes left. I said, we better get a beer because I think they're going to cut it off in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I don't know when the cutoff is, but we got in.
No, at Soldier Field, they actually let you drink way later than any other NFL stadium because they know that's when you need to drink the deeper into the game. It came close. I'll give them that.
It looked good for a little bit, and it gives me a little hope. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. And then I come home, and I tried to escape the news, and then I look at the news in the real world, and my hope is shattered.
It was an impossible weekend to turn the TV and feel good about the world. It really was. Every time I turned it on, and I watched a lot, I was repelled by it and yet couldn't turn away from it just because there was so much going on in both days. I mean, Virginia is just as awful could be. And then yesterday's situation was no better in Seattle. And the fact that President Trump refuses to denounce white supremacy or Nazism is so disturbing. And then you see, like, I watched a bunch of the news shows with guys defending that. And I don't know how you defend that. I don't know how you can realistically. This guy takes shots at, the president takes shots at everybody. If somebody does or says something that he doesn't like, he's quick to the Twitter to denounce them. The guy from Merck, the guy who's running Merck, he took a shot at him. He can't take a shot at Nazis or white supremacists, but he can rip on a guy who leaves his stable. I don't get it.
I don't understand that either.
It's beyond upsetting. In a little while, we'll talk to Ryan Burrow. Ryan is stationed in Virginia, and he'll let us know what's going on there in the aftermath of a very, very tough weekend. So stick around. We've got that and a whole lot more. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. I couldn't find my pick.
You've been practicing.
Thank you.
I
don't know who took my pick, but I couldn't find it. As I mentioned, a very, very rough weekend. In Virginia, especially. Charlottesville, Virginia was a mess over the weekend. Our own Ryan Burrow is stationed there right now. Are you in Charlottesville itself, Ryan?
I am, actually. And for some reason, a really big, loud truck wants to drive by me to say hello. So there you go.
I'm actually
out in front of the courtroom, the courthouse, where James Alex Fields Jr. Just made an appearance, although he didn't physically come in here. He was made the appearance before the judge via video link from jail. He was denied bail. He's the gentleman, 20 years old, from Ohio, suspected of plowing a car into a group of counter-protesters just ahead of that neo-Nazi white supremacist rally that was supposed to take place. Things really got heated up Friday, you may remember, when that Tiki Torch demonstration began. There were some scuffles at that point. Pepper spray was used. There was an arrest. A couple people hurt as well. And so a lot of people have been asking, you know, well, after that happened Friday, why didn't they just shut things down on Saturday and say, no, no demonstrations, we're not going to allow it. So the police are taking a little bit of a hit as far as criticism regarding that. The DOJ says it plans on getting involved. The Attorney General meeting with President Donald Trump today, actually, to discuss Charlottesville and see if there were any kind of civil rights violations involved. In the meantime, you've got a community here that's trying to heal. Three people died in total, not only 32-year-old Heather Heyer, who was in that crowd that where the car plowed into, but also two Virginia State Troopers who died when a helicopter crashed. Their job was to kind of monitor the situation from the skies, and they had some kind of issue and ended up crashing about 7 miles away.
Do we know what the crash entailed? Because that's so tragic that happened and is somewhat related.
You're talking about the
helicopter.
Helicopter crash. It appears to be some kind of malfunction at this point. That's all we know. There are only two people aboard at the time.
The mayor of Charlottesville, Ryan, Michael Signer, has been adamant about his belief that President Trump should say something to denounce the white supremacists, the Nazis, the alt-right. He's not done that so far. What's the feeling there in the city?
Yeah, he, as well as the governor, Terry McAuliffe, also making that same call. I don't know if anything the president does at this point would make anyone feel any better, because the moment may have passed already. A White House spokesperson did say that President Trump condemns white supremacists, KKK, neo-Nazis, and all extremist groups, but that was through a spokesperson, not out of his mouth. Governor Pence did come out and say something, but like I said, it may be too little too late for the administration as far as getting out the right messaging. People have already kind of criticized him for that, but we'll see what comes out of this meeting with the Attorney General today. We'll see if he comes out and strongly denounces the KKK and some of these neo-Nazi groups, and I guess move forward from there.
I try not to get very political on my Facebook page, on our show Facebook page. Donald Trump tweeted something out. We all must be united and condemn all that hate stands for. There is no place for this kind of violence in America. Let's come together as one. And I feel the only response to that is then lead by example, Mr. President. Everything is literally going to hell in a handbasket now.
Well, the argument is some of the rhetoric fueled this. And we're getting this argument actually from every direction, because yesterday it was the leader of this Unite the Right movement. I don't know if you saw that press conference. It was a wild one that actually got taken over by protesters, and the speaker got shoved to the side. But he said that part of what fueled the issues on Saturday was anti-white hate. He said that was the reason things got out of control. And he also blamed police for not stepping in sooner, or at least protecting their rights to march and to protest. The phrasing of it is a little interesting, because everyone can either take it to be good or to be bad, you know, in favor of them or against them. And, you know, it's something that I don't know if it'll ever get sorted out one way or the other.
Ryan, you know what's strange is, as I watched the events of the weekend unfold, both in Virginia on Saturday and then in Seattle yesterday, now keep in mind, I'm just watching this on TV, but I can't figure out who's who. I just see people wearing helmets and vests and punching and swinging at each other. How are people there able to tell who's who?
That's a great question.
I don't know. I really, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is a college town, a lot of young people, and, you know, people who, when you walk up to on the streets, don't know their ideology one way or another. And so, yeah, you don't know who the good guys or the bad guys are in any moment, or good guys who are about to do bad things, you know, or bad guys who are going to do good things. I mean, it's so hard in that moment, and that may be one of the reasons why police didn't go in and just start, you know, pushing people out or, you know, physically moving people, is because they didn't know who was who. Now, one counter to that is there had been suggestions this be moved to a bigger park, and maybe you can at least create some kind of division or dividing line at that point, at least physical dividing line. But yeah, when you've got closed quarters like we had here, you know, it's hard to differentiate, and it's hard to, you know, make accurate decisions.
And this is the era of protests once again. Protests have come back. They've happened. They're usually peaceful. And I don't know what could have been done to block a car from driving in there. So I don't know that it's necessarily anything to do with the police fault.
I can tell you this. This is the gripe from residents here. This is a very narrow roadway. If you had a chance to see the images, it slopes down. You know, this is an old town right here. I mean, this is old time Virginia. That everything is very narrow and slopey. And you know, 4th Avenue there, it usually apparently is blocked off during big events that they have downtown. For example, concerts in the park that they have, or concerts in the mall area, they'll block that off to prevent cars from coming through. Why that wasn't done here, we just don't know. Maybe they figured it was too far away from the actual demonstration site, or maybe they weren't prepared for the counter protesters to be in that area. But that's one of the criticisms.
Ryan, I know you've been very busy. You got into Virginia last night, but I don't know how much time you've had to watch what's going on in the internet. But this guy that's driver His teachers have come out and said, you know, in the past, he's had a history of being something of a Nazi sympathizer, if not an admirer of the Nazis and Adolf Hitler. There's nothing he can even do about that, right? I mean, somebody can say that and write that, but he can't watch everybody who's ever said something kind about the Nazis or Adolf Hitler. It's impossible.
No, you're right about that, and how much of that will play into the you know, eventual future trial. We'll see. I mean, the fact of the matter is he's not being tried for what he believes in. He's being tried for, you know, slamming a car into a group of people. I'm sure some of his history will come up during during that trial once it happens. He's expected to make another court appearance later this month, August 25th, was what the judge decided. But as far as getting into his mind, the only thing that we know at this point, according to the information that he revealed to the judge, is he makes about $650 a week, could not afford to have an attorney, so he would be assigned a public attorney in that case. Now, the public attorney here, the public defender, says that he cannot defend him, declined to do it because he has a relative who was involved in one form or another with these demonstrations. We don't know on the counter side or on the, you know, on the white supremacist side or maybe police involved. We're not exactly sure, but so he's been assigned another attorney. And boy, imagine getting that phone call.
Yeah.
Hey, guess who you? Guess right. Who we're going to have you represent? You know, it's
tough draw.
It'll be an interesting one. Yeah.
It's so sad. Did you see the mother of the victim?
Yeah,
she was on the news last night, just saying how proud she is that her daughter was out there standing up for what she believed in. And it's just so sad. It's just awful.
Yeah, she said she was defending her beliefs. And, you know, we've heard nothing but good things about Heather Heyer,
yeah.
A 32-year-old and, you know, a mother who's now got to deal with that pain and, you know, an adult daughter, but still a daughter and, you know, deal with that moving forward.
We're not
and
all
from Charlottesville, which is a great point to make, too, because she was from Charlottesville. A lot of these people who came to demonstrate were not
right.
from Charlottesville, including this suspect in custody right now who's from Ohio. So I talked to one resident here who said they felt and I'm not going to sugarcoat. He says they felt like they got raped. You know, someone came in and violated them and then left. And, you know, they're obviously very upset with what happened. They're trying to move on. But, you know, they don't feel good about what happened at all.
We're not all going to agree on everything, but you can't resort to violence. It's just unacceptable. And I wish the president would talk about that. Which, do we know what time he will be speaking about this, Ryan?
We're getting some mixed messages. Supposed to have this meeting with the Attorney General and FBI Director right about now.
Yeah, he came in, Ryan. He went into the White House not too long ago, and reporters were shouting questions at him, but he did not at that time choose to answer any of them.
We might hear something from him immediately after. That would be kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing. There's also an event coming up at 3 o'clock Eastern time that we will monitor as well. We don't know if the president will speak at that or maybe the attorney general, but hopefully by this afternoon we'll know a little bit more about what's going on behind closed doors.
We've got it all covered here on WGN. Ryan Burrow from Charlottesville, Virginia. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Take care, Ryan. Thanks so much. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news and then a big full show ahead. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. As the mother of two teenage boys, when they were first born, I would get all these baby books because I didn't know how to take care of kids. It's like, you know, here's what you do. What if they have colic? But then when they turned into teenagers, it got a little more difficult
mm-hmm.
because they had their own minds.
Sure.
And they could make decisions on their own. So I found this website, Grown and Flown, and have been reading it ever since. And one of the co-founders of Grown and Flown is on the line with us right now. This is Lisa Heffernan. How are you, Lisa?
Great, Wendy. Thank you so much.
Now, this basically, this is not a mommy blog per se. It is about kids, ages 15 to 25?
Exactly. It's about all those transitions our kids make when they're finishing their childhood years and transitioning into their adult years. And, you know, it's about a lot of complex issues from financial aid in college to kids getting their first job to some of the risks they run in college with drinking and drugs and sexual assault and some of the things we parents worry about. And it's also about a lot of the joys that we experience in these years.
Just saw you on the Today Show with Hoda and Kathy Lee.
So fun. So fun.
be honest, there's alcohol bottles under the chairs when you're on there, isn't there? There is,
you know,
right?
We were on the couch.
So oh, you were? All right.
Yeah, they've got different sets. It's actually a shockingly small space with a number of different sets. So we were on the couch, so there was no wine.
All right.
Because it's funny, you were discussing going away to college and drinking, and Bill's like looking at going, wait
there's
a
more
minute.
Drinking going on that show than there is on most college campuses.
All right. Now, I know that a lot of kids are going back to school, and Bill, you've already been through this with your girls. My son Michael was going to go to Belmont University in Nashville, and I have to be honest with you, they did not come through with very much scholarship money despite his pretty great score on his ACT. I was very disappointed, and then the more we talked, I didn't feel he was ready to go 7 hours away from home. Lisa, he was very mad at me at first,
yep.
But we went to our community college, College of DuPage. We did the orientation day, and he says, you know what? I think this is the right choice. So thank God. But he was very mad at me for not pulling the trigger. A lot of his friends are going away to school. This is the time. Everybody's starting college.
Yeah. It's, you know, community college is such a fantastic move for so many kids, either because they're not ready, because their families need this to do this financially, or because they just don't even know what they want to do yet. A lot of kids more and more in the U.S. are taking a gap year because of that. They're spending that year between high school and college working, doing some sort of job, just trying to find their feet. Our kids can still be very young and perhaps not ready for college. It's a really good move for them not to go away when they're not ready.
Lisa, explain this to me. We brought up gap years with you a couple of visits ago because my daughter Kylie took a year off for a gap year. When I was a kid, if that was an option, I would have taken the gap year and extended that into two or three or four or five gap years. What's in it for a kid to just take that break? Explain.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, you think you would have taken it, but, you know, the kinds of jobs you can get with just a high school degree may have whet your appetite for more education and a better job and you know, something that might interest you more. There's a couple of reasons for it. One is just from growing up. Sometimes growing up just takes time, and sometimes these kids are 17 years old. I know one of my kids graduated from high school. He was still 17 years old. It's very young. So there's just a little bit of time for growing up, a little bit of pressure off. Sometimes kids haven't gotten the scores that they want, so it's a chance to get the scores you want and apply again. Sometimes kids benefit with just taking one or two classes in a community college while working and easing into college because maybe their study skills weren't everything they could have been in high school, and it's a chance now at the age of 18 to learn those study skills. And finally, it's a chance to figure out what you're interested in, do a little exploring in the world, and then start college with a clearer idea of where you want to go with your job and with your career.
I understand, in a sense, like your daughter went to Costa Rica and yeah. She had this amazing experience and that she grew as a young woman.
Mm-hmm.
But some kids, the gap year just means, oh, I'm going to play video games. I don't understand how they can turn a corner and then go, you know what? I want to go back to school.
Well, you know, I think if they're still living in our homes, parents can set some of those rules. So video games are probably not the activity of choice except for after work hours. I think parents need to say you're either going on an experience, you're either going on community service, or you're going and doing a job. Kids can get jobs. They can get full-time jobs when they're out of school and high school. Millions of kids do it, you know, all over the country. College isn't what every child does. So I think parents need to lay down the law on some of that.
All right, with college starting, we want to ask you about some of the conversations that we should have with our kids before they go away to school. Why don't you start on that one?
Sure. This is a really, really important moment, and we don't want to miss it. This is like weddings and graduations. This is one of the big moments in life, and what we say has a lot of weight with the kids. And we've talked to thousands and thousands of parents about what some important things to talk about with kids, either as they're leaving or just in the days running up to their leaving. And one of them is talk about how lucky they are and how fortunate they are. That gratitude conversation, we've probably been having them with them for 18 years. Any kid who's going to college this fall is lucky. It's an enormous opportunity. You know, they've had great education to get there, and they just need to be thankful for the gift that they're getting. One of the things that research shows us is that we feel that they're not listening to us. They roll their eyes at us. They stare at their phones. You know, they give us that kind of blank 18-year-old stare where you think nothing's getting through. We are getting through. Our messages are very clear, and we need to keep talking to them.
Don't you believe? I mean, I just know thinking back to things I used to do. My mom used to drive me nuts. We used to fight a lot. But really, when push came to shove, she's the only one that I didn't want to disappoint.
Yep. You may have fought. You may have said, I'm not listening. I swear, I almost put my fingers in my ears when my mother spoke at that age. But they hear us. We heard our parents. You can still remember that you heard your mother, and our children can hear us. So really, really important discussions around binge drinking and the very, very real dangers to them. This is one of the most dangerous things kids are engaging in college, and they don't really understand the physical effects and the psychological effects of it. Sexual misconduct, as we all have read, it is rampant on college campuses, whether it's your son or your daughter. You need to talk to them about the very real risks and how to protect their safety and what to do if somebody gets harmed, if it's a friend or themselves. You know, what do you do with that 2 a.m. phone call? So we need to talk to them about drug use. Again, the drugs that are on college campuses now are much more dangerous than the drugs that were on campuses 20 or 30 years ago. And if we don't have those conversations with them, who's going to?
My wife had a very specific conversation with both of our daughters about essentially that, just saying, don't drink something that you didn't see prepared out of a bottle or a tap or something, because there's always that chance that somebody could have slipped something in there, and then that doesn't end well.
That's great advice when you said that on the air. And also, I think you said never leave your drink unattended.
Ever. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
God, we never had to worry about that.
Nope, but our kids do, and they need to hear it from us. And, you know, they don't need to just hear it once. They need to hear it again. We send these little reminders, send texts, bring it up in conversations. You know, my kids at one point just, Mom, we've heard this. Until they push back, until you're sure that that message is through, you really can't say some of these things too often.
All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break, and then there's more to discuss. If you want to jump in, why not? 312-981-7200 is our number. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Back to school already. I know that if you have college kids and they're going away to school, they're probably leaving now or have left already. And to help us get through all this is Lisa Heffernan, one of the co-founders of Grown and Flown. You can go to grownandflown.com. And I just want to mention that your website is also helpful for parents of high schoolers as well. It's not just college age students.
Yes, we're covering ages 15 to 25, so that high school experience, college experience, and just out of college experience, and for kids who aren't going to college and are going on to other things that kids go on to after high school.
Bill has told me this story before about he knew a friend's child who got a perfect ACT score. You finish it.
Well, they had two schools they wanted to go to, and even with a perfect ACT score, she didn't get into either of those two schools, which is very alarming.
Because
to me.
You don't meet the quota, and I just find that to be, like, what makes you want to achieve greatness then as a student if you can't get into, like, your number one choice with great grades? Didn't she have perfect, straight A's
she
and everything?
She did everything right, yeah.
It's very difficult. College admissions, as you know, everyone reads in the papers, is getting more and more competitive. The nice thing, actually, is that the years, we've gone through the biggest birth years. The biggest birth years were kids who were born in the mid-90s. So actually, we're on the downslope. And there is some drop-off in the number of applications going to colleges right now as we go into the birth years of kids born in the 21st century.
What's causing that, the drop-off?
Because there were fewer people born in the 80s, and they're the ones having kids now. It's the end of all the baby boomers' children, and that's a large generation. It's just a demographic thing. So there's a slight drop-off. But it's very frustrating, and kids do need to apply to a number of colleges to make sure that they get in, because it's really, for almost any college, it's a bit of a gamble.
I remember, Bill, when your daughters went away to school, you were a mess.
Yeah.
You really were.
I'm already a mess. Kylie's leaving a week from Wednesday, and I'm already a mess.
Is it a little less of a mess than when she first went away?
No. You'd think it would be, wouldn't you? But it's not.
I have a senior leaving tomorrow. I have a college senior leaving tomorrow, and I was just trying to think, I got this. I've done this. He's gone away 3 years, and it's haunting me.
Right. It's still really difficult.
See, and that makes me feel guilty that I'm lucky enough to have a kid who's not going away. I see everybody's posts on Facebook like, oh, this is so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I'm lucky that he's not going away. I talked to one of his friends who is going away yesterday and said, are you excited about school? He's going to Mizzou. And he said, yes. And I said, are you a little nervous too? And he goes, well, of course. This freshman year going away for the first time ever is pretty frightening.
It is, Wendy, and you really hit on a good point. Everyone's looking at everyone's Instagram feeds and their Facebook feeds and whatever else, like Snapchat feeds that our kids are looking at, and seeing parties and fun, and as if freshman year is just one long, joyful experience. most kids have a period of transition. For some kids, it's a week or a month. Some kids, it's the whole first semester or even the first year before they've really found their feet, found their friends, found their interests. It's really important to send your kid off with accurate expectations. Don't tell them they're going to, you know, show up the first weekend. It's going to be great, and they're going to love it. Tell them that, you know, you may have a rust patch. We're here. Call us. Text us. You know, reach out to your high school friends. Try and set some realistic expectations so that they're not let down and they're not crying. And, you know, you haven't all these. You may get some homesick calls, but at least if their expectations are realistic, you'll be able to talk them down off that ledge.
Lisa, how do you realize what is and isn't too much contact with your child once they've gone away to college? Like, I wanted it to play out on its own and just determine how often I called either of them or texted either of them.
Would you call every hour?
Every
for the
couple
first
hours,
week?
Every 2 or 3 hours.
Well, there's a lot of texting, as you know, that goes on with this generation. You know, a lot of experts say, you know, let them reach out, let them set the tone. I'm not really in favor of that, and there are a lot of experts who line up on the other side. You need to be there for them for those first couple weeks. This is a risky time in terms of their drinking. They may have not done much drinking in high school, and now they're going to be exposed to it. It is one of the riskiest times in terms of sexual assault, the first year or two of college. So, and also risks of depression and anxiety. So it's important to keep in contact with them. Sometimes it's just a little text that says, you okay, everything okay? Giving them that opportunity to come to you in case they're worried about something, they're anxious, just keeping in touch. So that you're the only one who's going to know whether they have a problem in those first weeks, because the people that they're surrounded by aren't really their friends. They're really their acquaintance. Hopefully they'll become their friends, but they don't know them well enough to know if something's wrong. So I urge parents not to keep an hourly contact, but just every day or so, just to check in and make sure that it's all going okay for those first weeks or months.
Lisa, I created an emoji that I would send them of a sad-looking dad looking at an empty bedroom. Is that okay? I hope it is.
Perfectly fine.
All right.
All right. And, you know, I know you're not a psychologist, but you have been dealing with the website Grown and Flown, and you come across a lot of articles, so I'm going to ask you this. When do you decide if it's time to let your child come home? I know two separate situations. One, by semester's end, the kid was absolutely miserable, and the parents said, you're going to have to finish school, and it ended up badly. He hated it. Another friend, she was ready to come home at the semester. The parents said, I think you should finish the year. She now loves it and is back at school. When do you decide that it's time that maybe your kid should come home?
That's a very, very difficult question because obviously, as you just pointed out, it depends on each individual kid. If your kid is in a lot of pain, if you think your kid is at risk for depression or undue anxiety, and it sounds like in that first case that's what the parents were facing, you need to start thinking about Plan B because college is extremely stressful. UCLA does a survey of freshmen every single year, and the one thing that they note is that the risks of anxiety and stress and depression are rising in freshmen. So we don't want to put our kids in that vulnerable situation if we feel they can't handle it. One thing to do, though, is have them see somebody professionally. So if they've come home for Thanksgiving and they're very anxious, or they come home for college and you feel like, and they're saying, I don't want to go back, have them see somebody. Have them see somebody who's a professional, who understands the risks, who can speak to them in a way that you as a parent who are so emotionally involved can't, and maybe get some analysis done that way.
Lisa, I want to throw a scenario at you that I thought was a little extreme, but it kind of makes sense. A friend of mine did this. He met his son's college roommate, and he gave him his phone number. And he said, look, this is just between me and you.
Yep.
If anything weird is going on with my kid, call this number. This is me. I want to know anything. Are you approve of that or not approve of that?
I'm not a big fan of going behind your kid's back because you're suggesting that you don't trust your kid. And
yeah.
We need to trust our kids. I don't think, however, there's anything wrong with having extra phone numbers. Look, my kid just jumped into water with his phone, so now he doesn't have one.
Oh.
So it's not a bad thing if you've got your kid's college roommate's phone for that night that it's either dead, there's something that's happening in your family, there's a reason you need to get in touch with them, or if the roommate is concerned about your child's health.
Look, yeah.
Freshmen get sick. They get really sick. They wind up in the infirmaries. It's nothing wrong with the roommate having a phone number and saying, you know, Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so, I've just walked him over to the infirmary. They're checking him out. You know, you just might want to know.
Yeah.
So sharing those phone numbers, nothing wrong with that. But going behind your kid's back,
that's a little much. Yeah.
So what? Just do it right in front of them, and as you meet the roommate, just say, listen, I want to give you my number in case of an emergency. Perhaps, you know, you could give me yours. I won't use it, but this is for extreme emergencies. Is that the right way?
Exactly. If someone's sick, if the phone is dead, if they need to reach you, hopefully it will never happen. But as we all know, life happens.
Sure.
It's not bad to have it. But letting your kid know that you're going to make that contact. I've never done it myself. I know I've got a parent group of 35,000 parents, and this has been discussed in our group. Many parents do it, many parents don't do it. But being above board, I think, is what's important.
GrownAndFlown.com. Please tool around, see whatever they have to offer, because I'm guaranteeing you will find something that will help you along the way. Lisa Heffernan, one of the co-founders, GrownAndFlown.com. Thank you so much. Good luck with your senior going back to school.
Thank you both so much.
Take care, Lisa. Appreciate it. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We've got news coming up, and then a lot more show, including later on Eric Zorn joining us. That's at 11:35. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. In about a half an hour, Eric Zorn of the Tribune joins us. We'll talk about the big events that took place over the weekend. And then after that, at 12 o'clock, you and I will head toward the stream where...
And all hell will break loose.
Oh, it's unbridled, Wendy. There's no bridles. Yeah, there's none of that. All right, so I started to tell you this off air, but let's discuss this on air because then more people, I think, will hear it.
You're a genius.
I did the math in my head. I read this article about Boeing. Boeing. That's the company that makes airplanes. Your number one airplane manufacturer, I believe, in the world, I think. All right, so they're testing airplanes now that will not have a pilot, a completely pilotless airline. You'll hop on an airplane here at O'Hare or Midway, and no matter where you want to go, they'll just program it in, and then it'll get there. There won't be any pilot.
Is it going to be on a track? Because otherwise, I don't want to take part.
You won't have any tall, handsome guy with a southern accent pointing things out to you on the flight.
Why do they all have that accent? Do they train in Texas or something?
Even if they
train.
Football
players, too.
Yeah, it's a similar accent, isn't it? I don't know why. I don't know why that is. All right, so here's what I was thinking, and I can't even figure out my own thought process on this. I'm extremely nervous at the idea of cars that don't have anyone behind the wheel. Extremely nervous. Like, the more I read about it, the more scared I get, going, oh, this isn't just science fiction. This is a reality. This is going to happen very, very soon, is that you'll get in a car and it'll take you somewhere and nobody will be behind the wheel. That scares me. But the idea of an airplane without a captain, I go, yeah, all right, I'm okay with that.
How in the world can you be okay with that?
Here's what I think it is. I think because most of the flight is already computerized, the pilot of an airplane today does extremely less than he did 15 or 20 years ago.
But I think they are somewhat involved in the takeoffs and landings, which are the most important part.
I know they are.
And sometimes the instruments go awry. Have you not seen Airplane?
Yes. Maybe I'm not good with either, now that I've rethought it.
Because with a car, in a weird way, I've been thinking about this, because I don't like that whole concept either of a self-driving car. But imagine all the emotion is taken out of it. So less road rage. If cars are driving themselves, they're not going to be flipping each other
off. Until the computers realize, much like the computers that we heard about last week where they developed their own language, I think computers will somehow figure out some sort of aggression that they'll express, like computer robots do. I don't know how they do it. But if a car can't, like today, if somebody said, here, just to ease your fear, we're going to send you one of these cars to your house. It'll come to your house, it'll pick you up, and it'll take you to work. I'd be scared every inch of the way.
There needs to be like a safety in the back. You know, when you go to driver's ed and the passenger side has the brake there?
Right.
You need something in the back as the passenger in case it goes haywire. You need to have like an ejector.
Like driver's ed brake. You know how your driver's ed teacher had that brake?
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that same thing.
But this would be in the back seat, or just some way to make the car stop, or an ejector seat, like I said.
Oh, an ejector seat is interesting. Like a James Bond.
And you could
Bond.
Use that in the airplane, too.
Right. Right. I don't know why it's such a big deal to me, but just the thought of it's so scary to me. Because when you're on a flight, you have no defense really anyway. It's all up to...
If you have Sully Sullenberger, you have defense.
Well, I only fly with Sully Sullenberger. I won't get on an airplane unless he's on it.
630 just texted that. Remember, Sully, it took his brain to override the computer.
Right.
So you cannot go in an... It's a bigger drop than from a car.
Oh, yeah, of course. Now, here's the other thing, and I know that this is the paranoid part of my brain talking, but...
I like that side,
what,
by the way.
Oh, that's the best side of my brain, is the paranoid side. What if somebody really wanted to do something horrible and they were able to break into the computers that run these cars and just cause havoc, just make cars crash whenever they wanted to? Do you remember the X-Files episode where some kid had the ability to switch stoplights? Like he and his friend.
Giovanni
Ribisi.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember.
I think his friend was Jack Black in that episode.
Yes, he was.
It was, right?
And he could just sit there and like an ambulance and police cars can change the light.
Yeah.
He could do it.
He had that ability. All right. So I'm not saying a kid with some sort of telepathic powers, but what if some computer whiz... I'm not blaming this on Giovanni Ribisi, Wendy. Please don't think I am. But what if some computer whiz goes, hey, you guys are now so... you're so into it just being computer-driven. Well, I can mess with that grid... It'd be the most dangerous day in the world, wouldn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
It'd be awful.
I would certainly entertain the idea of going in a driving car.
Today, not... somebody sends a car today, you'd be okay? Would you get in it?
But
I'm so afraid of it.
I don't even like I like to drive myself.
Yes.
I don't even like to be a passenger, so maybe I wouldn't.
Who's the Sully Sullenberger of cars? Is there a guy that we could always get to be in the car with us the same way I fly only with Sully? I won't go anywhere without him. And is he upset about it? Bill, I got other things to do. I can't just take a car ride out of a flight with you every day. I got other things to do.
Please, somebody, 312-981-7200. Every time you hear this is your pilot speaking, it's not like a real Southern drawl, but there's something going.
I think they use that to sound more pilot-y. I think a pilot, no matter where he's from, I think he goes, I got to sound pilot-y. I'll just put on the Southern accent.
All right, explain the football players, because they all
They're
have
all from
it.
The South.
I mean, even Tom Thayer a little bit, who was born here.
Right.
It still sounds they,
But
you know,
hockey players, even if they're born in the United States, have
Canadian.
A Canadian lilt to their voice. There's some sort of Canadian element to their voice. I think it's just because they're so used to hanging out with other people from Canada or Europe that they just take on that voice.
I try to take on your voice sometimes since I'm with you all the time.
Make it higher pitched? Does that work? I don't know if it works.
I'm on the straight dope, but I can't find out why.
I think it's because the early astronauts and pilots, your prototypical astronauts and pilots were Southern boys. So it just became the thing that if you were going to go into that line of work, you go, well, that's who I'm going to emulate. I'm going to sound like I'm from the South.
I guess that's it. I don't know. I'm going to start doing that. I kind of talk like that when I'm around my mother-in-law, who I saw yesterday.
Well, it does, like, it's one of those vocal tics that if you are with people from there, you do kind of adapt a little bit. My cousins lived here. I have two cousins who lived here in Chicago, and they moved to Florida, and a month later, they sounded like they had lived in Florida their whole lives.
What does Florida sound like?
It took a month. I don't know how to characterize it in words, but there's a certain vocal tone to people who live in parts of Florida that we just don't have here. It's definitely Southern based, but there's more to it. Like they wouldn't say the word gum anymore; they'd go gum.
Really? That's
yeah.
Florida-ish?
Because most of the discussions my cousins and I would have were gum related, so they wouldn't say gum; they would just go gum. Like it was like G-U-H-M.
Gum.
Yeah.
Well, we had some linguist on with us one time and said, me more than you, but could totally hear my Chicago accent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, but then you hear, I did some voiceover work for a station in San Francisco, and it was like promos that were running on the air.
Mm-hmm.
This was years ago, mm-hmm. but I said, you know, something like classic rock, and they're like, we don't want rock. You got to say classic rock. Because
no,
that's how they
that.
Say it in California. It's
no.
like classic rock as opposed to classic rock. I guess I am Chicago-y.
The rock, the way you're saying it, is a more drawn out.
But they wanted classic instead of classic.
Because in California, they're stuck in their car all day and they don't have to. Like we have, you know, it's a different vocal intonation.
All right. Well, we mentioned that pilots have a Southern accent, and you mentioned hockey players have a Canadian accent.
Yeah, most of
them. And Mary, your worlds collided.
Yes, we lived in Canada, and we were flying home, and it was my husband and three children. And no, I don't recall them having anything but the aboot accent. And but at that point, Air Canada was offering, they pulled, a seat out of a ticket, whatever, number out of for a seat. And you could get a voucher for $100, $300, whatever, and towards airfare. Well, this one time, they pulled out this, you could ride in front with the pilots. And of course, I selfishly jumped up and left my husband.
Oh, sure.
With the kids, but I'm sure everybody went, what a witch.
Yeah.
You know what? Justification. I'm with the kids all the time, so you know what? Have quality time for him. So I go up there. I have to hook into this. We fly, probably for a half an hour. And they're telling me everything, and it's hard to be in the back of the plane because that's where all your turbulence really goes. So stable at the wings, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Front is very stable. So we're getting ready to land in O'Hare. And they go, oh, we're coming in a bit fast. What we're going to do. Now they tell me, oh, yeah, we've been on autopilot this whole time.
Yeah.
They're not doing anything. And they go, we're coming in a bit fast. We'll take it off the autopilot. And what we're going to do is snake it in. I'm like, okay, well, what does that mean? They go, well, that's when you're in the back of the plane and you feel it go from one way to the other.
Yeah.
That's called snaking it in because it can slow the it down before they land and before they bump into somebody else.
Oh, no.
But having everything be automatic, who could take over? Who could say that? And I don't know that there'd be anybody, so I think I would not have to.
Mary, here's where I'm curious, though. Shouldn't the computer on the plane be able to do a better job of correcting that than humans? You would think wouldn't you?
I thought the same thing, but yet I thought, you know what, maybe it's better to be safe and have them actually do that because they actually know what they're doing.
Right.
So it's kind of a give or take. And maybe in this day and age, because that was in the early 90s, they could do that. But again, not having anybody up there, it's just not so
uncomfortable. I have a feeling there'd be a transition where there'd be somebody up there, I would
imagine.
Like
a teddy bear. They'd just put a teddy bear
for instance. Just somebody up there just in case things didn't go well. I would imagine there'd be quite a long period of that, actually, right? There'd have to be.
Well, and here's the other question. If they do that, okay, either, like you said, what if somebody wants to break in up there? They're going to have to put, I think, everything, all that automatic stuff at the, say, the bottom of the plane.
Yeah.
Nobody really needs to see where they're going. So do you think as a passenger, you might, if you paid more, get to be in front with the windows?
Oh, well, I hadn't thought of that. That's quite a view, yeah.
Thank you, Mary. We appreciate you calling. People want to talk about this, 312-981-7200. Why the Southern accent? Would you go in an airplane with a pilotless airplane, basically?
Yeah.
You still would?
I would be, somehow, I would be okay with that over a car that didn't have a driver. I know that sounds idiotic, but I would. I'd be more comfortable with it. I don't know why. I just would. All right, give us a call or a text, 312-981-7200. We'll get to those in just a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, it's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, and we were talking about why pilots
have Southern accents. And a lot of times, like, they'll start the announcement not just with it. They won't just have the Southern accent, but they'll go, like, they'll do a long, like,
Like that, Barack Obama used to do.
Yeah, that same kind of, I got words coming, and here they are. You know, there's that kind of thing. I don't know why.
Well, Jim, you are a commercial pilot, correct?
Yes. Hi, Wendy.
Let me hear your delivery. Like, pretend you're on a flight right now.
Folks, like to welcome you aboard Flight 785 nonstop service to wherever you'd like to go today.
Oh, that's pretty smooth.
Villa Park. There's no Southern accent at all there.
Well, we all had the because we're not radio DJs and we can't think off the top of our heads. So we're all trying to figure out what we're going to say next.
Oh, that makes sense.
Can think off the top of your heads. You have a lot of things that can go wrong.
No, but first of all, I love your guys' show.
Thank you, Jim.
So you're like the wittiest guy I've ever heard.
Oh, thank you.
Fortunately, thanks to Wi-Fi on board the airplane, I get to listen to you while I'm flying.
Oh.
Of course, I won't tell you who I'm flying for, but now
right.
I'm streaming.
All right. That's excellent. So how much of the flight would you say, honestly, Jim, is computer controlled and how much of it is you?
Well, it's a lot of data input. So you're kind of telling the the flight management system what you want it to do. So the pilot still has a pretty integral role of, I want it to climb at this rate, I want it to fly on this heading, I want it to capture and navigate and fly this route. But technically, the autopilot's on, you know, as soon as the pilot's airborne, within 500 feet, usually the autopilot's getting engaged, and, you know, 500 feet is about the minimum most regulations allow the autopilot to actually fly it down, unless you're, you know, a category, what they call 3A, which says the auto land, auto throttle, auto brakes.
And has this changed dramatically since you've been a pilot? I bet you were a lot more hands-on early on, weren't you?
Oh, absolutely. Early on, you were hand-flying almost the whole flight. Yeah. And then as autopilots got more sophisticated and could do more things. But the snaking at in comment, what happens, controllers will bring in high. And, now it's in a pretty good high-rated descent. So what the pilot will do is just, it's on the control wheel. It's a little button, autopilot disconnect. He'll disconnect and start making these S-turns to bleed off, kind of extend the range, so to speak, so he can get down a little faster and get it back on profile for the runway.
So takeoffs and landings you still pretty much have to do yourself, correct?
Yeah, just I'd say, you know, 99.5% of the time pilots are actually doing the takeoff. They're doing the landing. So, you know, it's like, you know, most pilots, you know, they'll greet you at the door after you're leaving, but if it's that bang on hard landing, the door kind of pretty much remains closed.
Well, thanks for clearing things up. Will you give us your little announcement, like thanks for flying, and don't say the airline, you know, do a little wrap up for us before we let you go, Jim.
Well, before that, one last thing for the auto pilotless aircraft, remember that we've had drones out there flying, and these are guys flying them from a remote location on the ground. So
right.
Even though they're
That's true.
There's actually somebody still flying it. So
there's still a human involved.
You're going to see someone flying a 737 somewhere from their couch in their pajamas one day, I think.
But you're not nervous. You and other pilots aren't like, a year from now we may all be out of a job. That's not going to happen anytime soon, right?
No, and I still think we're so far away from that. I think there will always have one member on board the aircraft. I don't think passengers will ever be that comfortable knowing that there's nobody up front in case something happens.
Well, perfect. All right, send us on our way. Give us a little closing announcement that we've just landed. How about that?
All right, folks, sorry about that hard landing. It was first officer's first day on the job here, but we're working on well. We wish you well on your safe travels as you go about your business, and thanks for flying XYZ Airlines.
Excellent.
Thank
Boy, that
you,
sounded very
Jim.
Reassuring. Thank you.
Good job. We appreciate it. You know what else we appreciate?
Huh.
$1 filet mignon sandwiches.
Oh, tasty.
All right. I got to tell you, Bill and I want to let you in on a little secret. Here's what's going on today, correct? This is happening today. You can purchase a filet mignon. I say it strangely.
Say
what do you say?
French deliciousness.
Filet mignon in the form of a petite sandwich for $1. $1. And if one is not enough, get a dozen. With this deal, you can have up to 12 sandwiches for just $1 each. Where, you ask? Morton's The Steakhouse. You can pick it up in the bar. Let me give you the information.
They dropped some off, Wendy, and you tried one accidentally, and we both made the same noise, which was,
We did.
Mm-hmm. It's so good.
See, we're starting to speak alike.
Yeah.
Morton's The Steakhouse, celebrating National Filet Day. It's happening today. Really pay attention, guys, if you're near a Morton's. State Street, 1050 North State. Wacker Place, 65 East Wacker. $1 petite filet mignon sandwiches available from open. So they're open now until 10 p.m. tonight. Go to the bar. Ask for it. You can get a limit of 12. And they have a couple of wine dinners coming up. You can go to their website for more information. And that website would be Mortons.com. And they have Silver Oak and Toomey, a wine dinner happening Thursday, and Rombauer Vineyards wine dinner on Saturday. Find out more information at Mortons.com. And you know what they have dropped off aside from filet mignon sandwiches?
A very generous gift certificate.
a $100 gift certificate to Morton's. Oops, it's gone. It's in my pocket.
Where did it go? Oh, there's going to be an investigation.
Shall we give it away now?
Give it away right now. Be caller 11 at 312-981-7200. Caller 11 wins a fantastic $100 gift certificate to Morton's Steakhouses. They're so incredibly good. So be caller 11 right now. Don't mess around. 312-981-7200.
Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. The greatest father in all the land. Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. We sing the praises of Zorn.
All hail King Zorn.
All hail King Zorn. On Mondays, we are visited from, we get a visit from Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Now, last week, not in attendance, but for good reason.
I was at Fiddle Camp.
Oh, you weren't here last week?
I wasn't here last week. I know. It seems like I was. I know. It seems
John
like
Cougar Fiddle Camp.
John Cougar Fiddle Camp.
What goes on there at Fiddle Camp?
There's lots of fiddle playing going on there.
Fiddling
We have a 3-hour lesson in the morning.
But you're already really good at it. Is there still
always
things
room
to
for
learn?
Improvement?
Oh,
there?
Yeah. There's lots and lots to learn. And there are master fiddle players there who give, like I said, 3-hour lessons in the morning at various skill levels. And then there are little concerts in the afternoon, workshops.
Who's considered by fiddlers to be the best of all fiddlers?
That's a really good question. And this is one that we went around, everyone asked who their favorite fiddle player is.
Yeah.
I will say one thing, though, that the vast majority, I think, of really great hot fiddlers these days are young women.
Fiddlin' Marcy.
Fiddlin' Marcy?
Do you know who that is?
I don't, no.
From Mojo and the Bayou Gypsies. I don't know if she's with the band, but she's played with them. I almost thought we had her on.
I think
on
we did have her on at the Loop a
radio
thousand years
station.
Ago. We had Fiddlin' Marcy.
Because
on.
Once you meet a girl named Fiddlin' Marcy, you never forget that name.
Hey, guys, can I interrupt you? Here comes President Trump.
Oh. All right.
From the diplomatic room at the White House.
Cuts and reform. We are renegotiating trade deals and making them good for the American worker. And it's about time. Our economy is now strong. The stock market continues to hit record highs. Unemployment is at a 16-year low. And businesses are more optimistic than ever before. Companies are moving back to the United States and bringing many thousands of jobs with them. We have already created over 1 million jobs since I took office. We will be discussing economic issues in greater detail later this afternoon. But based on the events that took place over the weekend in Charlottesville, Virginia, I would like to provide the nation with an update on the ongoing federal response to the horrific attack and violence that was witnessed by everyone. I just met with FBI Director Christopher Wray and Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The Department of Justice has opened a civil rights investigation into the deadly car attack that killed one innocent American and wounded 20 others. To anyone who acted criminally in this weekend's racist violence, you will be held fully accountable. Justice will be delivered. As I said on Saturday, we condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence. It has no place in America. And as I have said many times before, no matter the color of our skin, we all live under the same laws. We all salute the same great flag, and we are all made by the same Almighty God. We must love each other, show affection for each other, and unite together in condemnation of hatred, bigotry, and violence. We must rediscover the bonds of love and loyalty that bring us together as Americans. Racism is evil. And those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups that are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans. We are a nation founded on the truth that all of us are created equal. We are equal in the eyes of our Creator, We are equal under the law, and we are equal under our Constitution. Those who spread violence in the name of bigotry strike at the very core of America. 2 days ago, a young American woman, Heather Heyer, was tragically killed. Her death fills us with grief, and we send her family our thoughts, our prayers, and our love. We also mourn the two Virginia State Troopers who died in service to their community, their Commonwealth, and their country. Troopers Jay Cullen and Burke Bates exemplify the very best of America, and our hearts go out to their families, their friends, and every member of American law enforcement. These three fallen Americans embody the goodness and decency of our nation. In times such as these, America has always shown its true character, responding to hate with love, division with unity, and violence with an unwavering resolve for justice. As a candidate, I promise to restore law and order to our country, and our federal law enforcement agencies are following through on that pledge. We will spare no resource in fighting so that every American child can grow up free from violence and fear. We will defend and protect the sacred rights of all Americans, and we will work together so that every citizen in this blessed land is free to follow their dreams in their hearts and to express the love and joy in their souls. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless America. Thank you very much.
And Bill and Wendy, there you go. It took a while for him to get there, but he finally did call out the KKK, neo-Nazis, and other hate groups. It, you know, he started out talking about the economy and then went into the statement about Charlottesville. And the statement, I think, got stronger as it as it went on.
Yeah. All right, let's do this. We're going to take a quick break. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune, so we'll go over what was just said by Donald Trump, and that's what's coming up next. So stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Bill Leffen, it's Wendy Snyder. Eric Zorn is our guest. Eric, fine columnist for the Chicago Tribune. President Donald Trump spoke just moments ago about the events over the weekend. He finally said something negative about white supremacists and Nazis and neo-Nazis. Is it too little too late?
I don't think it's... This is a good, I hadn't thought of it in those terms. I was just going to say, I thought that the speech was well written.
Yeah.
It was clearly like a group effort among people who are a little more measured than he is and who understood with the reaction that had gone on over the weekend that people had been very upset about what he had not said, basically. Mm-hmm. And so, he touched all the bases in this speech. He didn't read it with a lot of passion. It wasn't like...
Seemed kind of forced.
It wasn't like when Barack Obama would go to these scenes and he would really speak with passion and great force about this kind of stuff. But I think if you look at the words on the page, he said what he needed to say. And he should have said them on Saturday. So it was too late. I don't know if it's too little, though. I think that he was able to at least...
2 days too late.
2 days too late, but too little.
This speech started out with him talking about how great the economy is, how fantastic the job numbers are, the stock market's never been better. Is that for him or is that for us? Why does that get mentioned at the top of the speech?
Well, I have no idea why he would bring those two things together.
To toot his own horn, to say the economy's looking good.
It struck a very strange false note, and I thought for a minute maybe he wasn't even going to get to Charlottesville, that he was going to go, I want to talk about the economy and see you later, I'm out of here.
But is that him saying to us, I know things sure look desperate if you were anywhere near a TV or the internet over the weekend, but look at all the good. Was that his way of
this
saying?
This is what he's been saying. Like, this is how, because his whole healthcare thing fell apart.
Yeah.
Looks like their tax overhaul is not going anywhere right now.
Yeah.
He's probably not going to get money to build his wall. That all these promises he made, but he's able to point to this stock market, which has been growing has been going on a steady upward rise since, you know, most of the Obama years. You know, he's talked about the number of jobs he's created. It's actually been a fairly routine job creation performance, very similar to what you saw in Obama's term, maybe even a little lower. So
the stock market is a little confounding, though.
I think that some of these businesses are still thinking that they're going to get the tax relief that they are hoping for and the regulatory relief. The stock market, you can live and die by the stock market.
Right.
The stock market is probably going to come down at some point. Then it's going to be fake news, or it's going to be he's not responsible for it. So, you know, there's only so much that a president is responsible for. The Republicans never gave Barack Obama credit for this. He basically tripled the stock market during his years.
Yeah.
So they never give him any credit for that. So all of a sudden, like, oh, look, the stock market's going up. It's our fault. We get the credit for it. I'm not sure that's going to resonate with people. But again, it was a very strange way to start the speech.
It was.
Can I throw a little moment at you? I don't know if you saw David Duke's words over the weekend. David Duke's is a...
Right, and I know David Duke.
All right, so David Duke comes out and he says, "We're gonna, I'm mincing words a little bit, but we're gonna get everything that Donald Trump said when he was campaigning. We're gonna follow through on those things and make those things happen."
This was his promise. This
yeah.
is Donald Trump's promise to
right.
us. So, you know, we would be able to take back America.
Right. So if you're Donald Trump and you hear that, don't you say to yourself, well, I don't want to be associated with David Duke. That's the last thing I want. I got to get front and center and say to the American people, I don't want the support of David Duke or any neo-Nazis or any fascist groups, anyone who's like that. Why didn't he do that? Why is that?
I think
being
because
done today?
His instinct is not to push those people away. He knows that they are part of his base. See, I don't think that's a large enough group of people to be worried about nurturing. That, you know, you need to distance yourself from them because, you know, your hope for winning re-election and for holding on to the Senate and the House and all those things is to appeal to moderate voters. It's not to appeal to the people who are on the far fringe. I mean, those people are the number of neo-Nazis, the number of white supremacists and alt-right. I mean, it's not a huge number of people. So to be trying to win favor with him, they're probably going to vote for you anyway.
But
right?
This is a guy who reacts. If Rosie O'Donnell says something negative about Donald Trump, he jumps on that.
Right. Yes.
So why wouldn't he do the opposite? If somebody, an undesirable, quote unquote, says something positive, why wouldn't he jump on it?
Because they're saying positive things about him. Right. I mean, this is with all these people at this rally in Charlottesville.
Yeah.
They were wearing Trump hats and they were saying that Trump is great for them. And so his political instinct isn't very well tuned. So he'll come out and think, well, these people are supporting me. How can I distance myself from people who are supporting me? Well,
who they are.
That's a little bit upper level politics. It's not just like you like me, then I like you kind of thing, which is kind of how he deals with Putin, I think.
Yeah.
And you want to get a situation where you need to think, you know, a couple of moves ahead on the chessboard and realize that getting close to these people, not renouncing them right away, trying to do what he did was this false equivalence, saying, well, it was all sides, violence and hatred on all sides, trying to equate those people who are down there marching with their Nazi flags and their Nazi armbands with the people who are protesting against them. That was tin-eared and wrong. And I think it revealed something about his character that is really troubling. And a lot of Republicans came out. When you had, like, the head of a pharmaceutical company, Merck, this morning resigned from one of his. I mean, you've got a head of a pharmaceutical company getting the moral high ground on you.
Exactly.
But he took a shot at him
faster than
he did at the Nazis. And
right.
So,
yeah, I mean, this is his instinct. He's a counterpuncher.
But this is the perfect opportunity for a president to stand up for what's wrong and say something.
Right.
Isn't it?
It was. Saturday was the day where he missed the layup, where he missed the 2-inch putt. I mean, it was the day to be presidential. It was the day to rise above this stuff and to speak to our values and to speak to what this country stands for. And he didn't do it.
Yeah.
Today, I think he did do it. Too late. Yes, obviously too late.
And I said this off the air. I probably shouldn't say it. But to me, as I was listening, I was hearing what he almost had to say. It was written nicely. I don't know if he did it. But as I'm listening, there's no emotion, no sincerity behind it.
No, no passion.
It's like a husband who keeps cheating on his wife and he goes, honey, really, this time is the last time. I'm never going to do it again. There was no passion behind it. Yeah. This is something to get passionate about.
Right, but he did, I don't think he wrote that speech. I mean, the remarks, we got in trouble the other day. It looked to me like he was reading some very anodyne prepared remarks, and then he looks up and goes, on all sides. He looked like he was improvising that. And
but
that,
you've seen
that's
him do that before, right, where he goes, I need to go off book for a second, and he just reiterates what he already says, and you go, you didn't need to say that twice.
Well,
that's...
Or he lets loose with something that sort of reveals something about his character. I mean, I think that one of the ways that he won this election was he really, really appealed to this far right sentiment. He really appealed to those people, and they were four square behind him. They still are. There's all kinds of stuff online over the weekend about what was being written in the far right press about this, the stormtrooper sites and so on, that they were very happy that he hadn't distanced himself from him. They were saying, God bless this man. He walks away when they asked him to renounce the alt-right.
What do you make of this? There were a lot of people on the news shows all day yesterday saying that all those groups, all the neo-Nazi groups, all the alt-right groups, they kind of kept in the shadows, but now they feel like they have a friend in the White House. Now, that could be Donald Trump himself, or that could be Steve Bannon. But there was a feeling among those groups that we don't have to stay hidden anymore. We've got representation in Washington, in the White House, no less. Do you agree with that or disagree with that?
I do agree with that. I think that there's a lot to the idea that these people feel like this is the direction the country is going right now, that they can assert themselves in this way. They can fight back. I can't imagine a rally like this maybe 10 years ago. I don't think our country was there.
We're going backwards, aren't we?
Yep.
Well, we are in a lot of ways, and it's going to be interesting to see what they've threatened to go back to Charlottesville. The alt-right has threatened to go back and do these protests again. I think there are going to be a lot of fights about these Confederate monuments, because I think they should all come down. Honestly, anything that's a monument to these murderous traitors who went to war in defense of slavery, that it ought to come down. It's not history.
Do they stop teaching it in history?
No. There's a difference between teaching it in history class or having it in a museum.
And paying tribute to it.
I mean, some of these statues, many of them went up, you know, in the 1950s and 60s.
Right.
I mean, these were statements of, they were like the middle finger to the civil rights movement, these statues. They didn't go up like during the wars or right after the war. They were a statement in those statues. And the fact that these groups are rallying around these statues, to me, is reason enough to get rid of them all. So that happens.
God, I get sick to my stomach. Every morning I wake up, I check my, you know, AP News and other news sources to see what's happened in this crazy world of ours. And I feel like I've been punched in the stomach every day.
Right. And this isn't, we haven't even talked about North Korea. I was on vacation last week in the beautiful mountains of West Virginia. And I'm waking up every morning going, oh my gosh, he may nuke Chicago by the time I'm back. I may have to stay here. I hope I packed enough clothes. So
that's Eric Zorn. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has coming up next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. If you want to hear the bonus hour of our show, it's simple. Just go to either our Facebook page, Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on Facebook, or WGNradio.com. It's all right there. Here's Steve Bertrand.
Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno will be here just around the corner, and he's going to talk about how you can drive on methane one day. Actually, you know, Fair Oaks Farms, which is a huge dairy down off I-65 in
Indiana. For the record, that was Wendy, and
it
for
was
the record,
my mouth.
She did that with her mouth.
Okay.
All
right.
And they have come up with a... All right, I'll just sit here, and when the class is ready, I'll
go ahead. Oh, my God, Professor.
Well, I love Fair Oaks, if you just want to. Just as an aside.
It's actually a very cool place where they have figured out a way, they've got the technology to turn the methane into a fuel that fuels their trucks.
Wow.
So their milk trucks are fueled by cow manure, and they just got a big grant to continue that. So we'll
pour
talk
me a
to,
big old bowl of cereal, won't you?
She'll be on the stream in just a few minutes. This is Chicago's very...
Jeez.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Alexa, play Bill and Wendy, not Steve Bertrand.
Is it only Monday? Are you kidding me?
It's only Monday.
You missed me, didn't you?
Yeah.